Good morning, everyone. Last week we came to the end of Canto 1 of Book 10. So now we can continue with Canto 2, the Gospel of Death and Vanity of the Ideal. In this canto, Death will attempt to convince Savitri of the illusoriness of all the beautiful suggestions conveyed by that world of twilight, the twilight of the ideal, which we read about in the previous canto. And as usual, we'll start by reading. We'll read the whole canto. I think it's only got one section. Page 607. You will start, Manoha?
The Gospel of Death and Vanity of the Idea. Then feel the calm, inexorable voice. Abolishing hope, cancelling life's golden truths. Fatal its accents, smooth to trembling air. That lovely world, one thin and frail, most like some pearly evanescent to a farewell dream, on the faint verge of dusk in moonless eaves. Prisoner of nature, many vision spirit, thoughts creature in the ideal's realm enjoying, the unsubstantial immortality, the subtle, marvelous mind of man has found. Fame. This is the world from which thy yearnings came. When it would be eternity from the dust, man's thought paints images, illusion runs, prophesizing glories it shall never see, it labors delicately among its dreams. Behold this fleeing of light-tasseled shapes, aerial payment of unbodied gods, a rapture of things that never can be born. Hope chants to hope a bright immortal choir. Cloud satisfies cloud, phantom to longing phantom. Means sweetly, sweetly is clasped or sweetly chased. This is the stuff from which the idea is born. Its builder is thought, its base the heart's desire. But nothing real answers to their hope.
Thank you. Marianne.
Ideal dwells not in heaven, nor in the earth, the bright union of man's ardor of hope, drunk with the wine of its own fantasy. It is a brilliant shadow's gleam to spread beneath there. Thy vision is ever built to azure skies. Thy visitors, thy visions, ever through the rainbow's heart. That mortal longing made for thee a soul. With angel in thy body, thou calls love, who shapes his wings from thy emotion's hues. In the ferment of my body, of thy body, in the ferment of thy body has been born, and with the body that housed it must die. It's a passion of thy burning self. It's a flesh that holds the flesh to serve it. It is thy mind that sits on unserving mind and dreams a while that it has found its name. It is thy life that asks a human walk to uphold its weakness lonely in the world, or feeds its hunger for another life. The beast of prey that pauses in that in its skull, it crouches under a bush in splendid flower, receives the heart and body for its food. This beast thou blames, immortal in the world.
Thank you. Don.
Oh, human mind, they vain thee thou torturest an hour's delight to stretch through infinity's long void and fill his formless, passionless gulfs, persuading the insensible abyss to lend eternity to perishing things, and trickst the fragile movements of thy heart with thy spirit's feint of immortality. All here emerges born from nothingness, encircled at last by the emptiness of space, a while upheld by an unknowing force, then crumbles back into its parent naught. Only the music alone,
the mute.
Oh, sorry, only the mute alone can forever be. In the alone, there is no room for love. In vain to clothe love's perishable mind.
Mud.
Mud, what's the word? In vain to clothe love's perishable mud, thou hast woven on the immortal's borrowed room. The ideal's gorgeous and unfading mode. The ideal never yet was really made. Imprisoned in form that glory cannot live. Into a body shut in some form, intangible, remote, forever pure. A sovereign of its own brilliant mountain void. Unwillingly descends with the air to inhabit a white temple in man's heart. In his heart it shines, rejected by his life. Immutable, bodiless, beautiful, grand and dumb, immobile on its shining throne it sits. Dumb, it receives his offering and his prayer. It has no voice to answer to his call, no feet that move, no hands to take his gifts. Aerial statue of the new idea, virgin conception of a bodiless god, in light stirs man with a finger to create an earthly semblance of divine things. Its huge reflection falls upon man's acts. His institutions are its cenotaphs. He signs his dead conventions with its name. His virtues don the ideal skyey robe and the nimbus of the outline of its face. He hides their littleness with the divine name. Yet insufficient is the bright patience.
Pretense.
Yet insufficient is the bright pretense to screen their indigent and earthly name. Earth only is there and not some heavenly source.
Thank you. Mihong.
If heavens they are veiled in their own night. If a truth eternal somewhere reigns unknown, it burns in a tremendous void of God, for truth shines far from the forcibles of the world. How can the heavens come down to unhappy earth, or the eternal lodge in drifting time? How shall the idea tread earth's dolorous soil, where life is only a labor and a hope, a child of matter and thy matter fed, a fire flaming low in nature's grate, a wave that breaks upon a shore in time, a joining person trudge is best for gold. The avatars have lived and died in vain. Vain was the sage's thought, the prophet's voice. In vain is seen the shining upon the wave. Earth lies unchanged, the suckling sun. She loves her form and in no omnipotence, her mortal imperfections can erase. Force of man's crooked ignorance, heaven's straight line, or colonize a world of death with God.
Thank you. Jean-Yves.
O traveler in the chariot of the sun, High priestess in thy holy fancy shrine. For with a magic ritual in earth's hearts, worshipest ideal and eternal love. What is this love thy thought has deified? This sacred legend and immortal myth. It is the conscious yearning of thy flesh. It is the glorious burning of thy nerves. A rose of dream splendor that all in thy mind. The great red rapture and torture of thy heart. The sudden transfiguration of thy days, it passes, and the world is as before. The lavishing edge of sweetness and pain, the thrill in its yearning, makes it seem divine. The golden bridge across the road of the earth, a call finding to eternity, and yet how brief and frail, how soon is spent this treasure wasted by the gods on men. This happy closeness as of soul to soul, this honey of the body's companionship, this heightened joy, this ecstasy in the veil, this strange illumination of the senses. If Satyavan had lived, love would have died. But Satyavan is dead, and love shall live a little while in thy sad breast, and in his face and body fade on memory's wall, where other bodies, other faces come.
Thank you. Tekeste, you'll read? Helmut.
When love suddenly with the light, at first man steps into the world of the sun. In his passion he feels his heavenly enemy. The pony of fine sunlit patch of earth, the marvelous aspect clips of heaven's outburst. The snake is there, and the worm, and the heart of the woods. A word, a moment's act, can slay the god. Precarious is his immortality. He has a thousand ways to suffer and to die. By having the food alone. Only on set of earth can it survive. For thy passion was a sensual bond confinement, a hunger of the body and the heart. Thy want can tire and cease or turn elsewhere. All love may meet a dire and pitiless end by bitter treason, or love with cruel means separated. For thy unsatisfied will to others depart when first love's joys lie stripped and silent. Dull indifference replaces fire or an endearing habit into its life. An outward and uneasy union lasts, or the routine of life's compromise. Where once the seed of oneness had been cast, the sentence of spiritual calm, a divine adventure of heavenly powers, two strike, constant associates without joy, two egos straining in single reach, two minds divided by their giant thoughts, two spirits disjoined, forever separate.
Thank you. Amitraj.
Thus is the ideal falsified in man's world. Trivial or somber, disillusion comes. Life's harsh reality stares at the soul. Heaven's hour adjourned fleets into bodiless time. Death saves thee from this and saves Satyavan. He now is saved, delivered from himself. He travels through silence and felicity. call him not back to the treacheries of earth and the poor petty life of animal man. In my vast tranquil spaces, let him sleep in harmony with the mighty hush of death, where love lies slumbering on the breast of peace. And thou, go back alone to thy frail world. Chastise thy heart with knowledge, unwood to see. Thy nature raised into clear living heights, the heaven birds view from unimagined peaks. For when thou givest thy spirit to a dream, soon hard necessity will smite thee awake. Purest delight began, and it must end. Thou too shalt know, thy heart no anchor swinging, thy cradled soul moved in eternal seas. Vain are the cycles of thy brilliant mind. Renounce, forgetting joy and hope and tears, thy passionate nature in the bosom profound of a happy nothingness and worldless calm, delivered into my mysterious rest. One, with my fathomless nihil, all forget. Forget thy fruitless spirit's waste of force. Forget the weary circle of thy birth. Forget the joy and the struggle and the pain, the vague spiritual quest which first began. When worlds broke forth like clusters of fireflies, and the great burning thoughts voyaged through the sky of mind, and time and its aeons crawled across the vast, and souls emerged into mortality.
Thank you.
Savitri replied with dark power, dangerous music now thou finds, O death, melting thy speech in harmonious fancy, and fit, alluring to tired hopes, thy false fear mingled with sigh, stranger truth. But I forbid thy voice to slay my soul. My love is not a handle of the heart. My love is not a craving of flesh. It came to me from God, to God returns. Even in all that life and mind are loved, the whisper to me is still heard. A breath is felt from eternal sphere. Bowed by heaven and wounded with mine, the sweet fire rhythm of passion chants to love. There is a thought in its wild infinite cry. It rings with calling from forgotten heights, and when its friends are hushed to high winged souls, in their Antirian his burning breath survives beyond the rapturous core of sun, that flame forever pure in sky and sea, the voice of eternal existence. One day I shall behold my great return, who helps the dire disguises of the cross, and then terror and scorn. The peace which I draw near of the marvelous face, which I cast our candid souls upon your lap, then shall we clasp the ecstatic chase, then shall we shudder in the long sorrow to God, then shall we find the heaven unexpected strength.
Thank you.
Now, is there hope for God in its pure? The violent and darkened deities leaped down from the one breast in rage to find what the white gods had missed. They too are safe, My mother's eyes are on them, and her arms stretched out in love desire her rebel sons. One who gave me love and loved and beloved eternal, built himself a wondrous field and wove the measures of a marvelous dance. There, in its circles and its magic, turns attracted he arrives. Rebelled he flees. In the wild, devious promptings of his mind, he tastes the honey of tears and puts off joy, repenting, and has laughter and has wrath, and both are broken music of the soul, which seeks out, reconciled, its heavenly runner. Ever he comes to us across the years, bearing a new sweet face that is his bliss laughs to us, or it calls concealed, like far, like unseen, and trancing from moonlit branches in the floating woods, tempting our angry search and passionate feeling. Disguised, the lover seeks and draws our souls. He named himself for me, Bruchsachevan. For we were man and woman from the first, the twin souls born from one undying fire. Did he not dawn on me in other stars? How has he, through the
thickets
of the world, pursued me like a lion in the night, and come upon me suddenly in the ways and seized me with his glorious golden moon?
Thank you. Patty.
Unsatisfied, he yearned for me through time, sometimes with wrath and sometimes with sweet peace, desiring me since first the world began. He rose like a wild wave out of the floods and dragged me helpless into seas of bliss. Out of my curtained past, his arms arrived. They have touched me like a soft, persuading wind. They have plucked me like a glad and trembling flower and clasped me happily burned in ruthless flame. I too have found him, charmed in lovely forms, and run delighted to his distant voice, and press to him past many dreadful bars. If there is yet a happier, greater God, let him first wear the face of Satyavan, and let his soul be one with him I love. So let him seek me that I may desire, for only one heart beats within my breast, and one God sits there throned. Advance, O death, beyond the phantom beauty of this world, for of its citizens I am not one. I cherish God the fire, not God the dream.
Thank you.
I'm trying to have a bit less.
Let Ramna Rayan read first.
By death, once more, inflicted on our heart, the majesty of his command and great the world. The dry resolution are thy thoughts, a prisoner held by a spiritual form, of thy own success will the ardent slave, thou sendest evil voice to meet the sun, words winged with the red splendor of thy heart. That knowledge dwells not in the passionate heart, the heart's words fall back unheard from wisdom's throne. Vain is thy longing to build heaven on earth. Artificer of ideal and ideal, mind, child of matter, in the womb of life, to higher levels, persuades its parent steps. not allow ill that air in that. That mind, a glorious traveler in the sky, walks lamely on the earth to with footsteps slow. Hardly he can mold the life serving his stuff. Hardly can he hold the galloping hopes of sense. His horse looks straight into the very heavens. They draw their gold from a celestial mind. His acts work faithfully in the common core. All thy high dreams were made thy maker's mind. All thy high dreams were made by maker's mind, who surveys its dull work in matter's day. It's only ours where it alone seems to.
Thank you. Anandi, can you read? Line 305. Start the line before, a solid image of reality.
A solid image of reality, carve out of being to prop the words of time. Matter on the firm earth sits strong and sure. It is the first bone of created things. It stands the last when mind and life are slain. And if it ended, all around says to me. All else is only its outcome of its phrase. His soul is a brief flower by the garden's mind, created in thy matter's terrible lord, and perish with the plant on which it grows. From earth itself, it rose.
From earth, sap, it draws its heavenly view. All right. Okay, we'll go to the back, Lilla.
Thy thoughts are dreams that pass from matter's verge. Thy life, a lapsing wave on matter's sea. A careful steward of truth's limited means. Treasuring. Confounded facts from the responding power. Habits, minded to the bent posts of sense, where hidden gray routine climbs lies of this, and ties all creatures with the cords of law. A vessel of transmutings of this. A gloom that sticks together mind and life. If matter fades, all crumbling cracks and falls. All upon matter stands as on a rock, yet to security and guarantor rest for prudentials and impostor proofs. A cheat of substance where no substance is. An appearance in the symbol and the not. Forms a more original right to birth. Its aspect of a fixed stability and the cover of a captive emotional swirl. An order of the steps of energy spans whose footmarks leave wherever the same signs. A complete phase of unsubstantial time, a trickle dotting the emptiness of space, a stable seeming movement without change, yet change arrives and the last change is there.
Thank you. Franz.
What seemed most real once is near shore. Its figures are snares that trap and imprison the sense. The beginningless void was its artifice. Nothing is there but aspects limited by chance and seeming shapes of seeming energy. All thy like this, mercy, grace, and gift alone. All sin can act by the inconscient grace. The gift of so rosy luxury of thy sorts, turn not thy gaze with it thyself to good, and vision in the gleaming crystal mind. Close not thy lips in dream the forms of gods. At last to open thy eyes constant and see the stuff of which now in the world are paid. Inconscient and done inconscient love. Inexplicably. A moving bird spring forth. The wild secure happily incentive. The quicker rest content with its own truth. For something on its Nisian breast was born. From them to see and know, to feel and love. To touch its acts, imagine the soul within. To grope for truth and dream of self and God.
Thank you. Stefania.
When all unconscious was, then all was well. I, death, was king and kept my legal state, designing my unreal, unnerving plan, creating with a calm, insensate heart. In my sovereign power of unreality, obliging nothingness to take the form, infallible my blind and thinking force, making by chance the fixity light fades, by wind the formless condensation, founded on the hollow ground of the unknown, the sure visibility of nature's people. I curved the vacant pillar into space, a huge expanding and compact in breath, harbor the fires of the universe. I struck out the supreme original spark and spread its sparse grand fairness to the unknown. Manufactured the stars from the occult radiances. Marshaled the platforms of the invisible dance. I formed hearts beauty out of atom and gas, and built from heavy glass building.
Thank you. Audrey.
Then God came and spoiled the harmonious world, massively bound to hope and strength and fear, tissue and nerves, war, joy, and memory. The conscience also search, slow, glorious path, and ignorant personal God is born in mind, and to understand inventive reasons law, the impersonal gaps swallowed back to man's designs. And trouble rocks the great world's blind storehouse, and nature lost to God in the light of promise. Thus came its wrath.
Warped.
Comprehensible scene. Souls emerged in life, delight, and pain. And language sleep, and mind's mortality. But beings in nature's prison, living in death, and consciousness left in seeking ignorance. And evolution's slow, arrested end. This is the world in which thou meets astray in the tangled pathways of the human mind, in the issues, searching of thy human life, searching for thy soul, and thinking God is here. But where is room for soul, or place for God, in the brief immensity of the machine? In transient breath thou takest for thy soul, born from a gas, a flat, a spoon, a genie, in
Thank you. Narendra.
Intercourse between the copper and the meter of white, thy consciousness affects the world around in the distorting mirror of ignorance, or upwards turns to catch imagined stars. Or if a half truth is playing with the earth, throwing its light on a dark, shadowy ground, it touches only and leaves a luminous smudge. Immortality thou claimest for thy spirit, but immortality for imperfect man. A god who guards himself at every step would be a cycle of eternal pain. Wisdom and love thou claimest as thy right, but knowledge in this world is error's mate. A brilliant procuress of nascence, and human love a posturer on earth's stage, who imitates with a verb, with verb and a fairy dance, and extract pressed from hard experience man's knowledge cast within the barrels of memory, as a harsh savior of a mortal brought, a sweet secretion from the erotic glands, flattering and torturing the burning nerves. Love is a honey and poison in the breast, drunk by it as the nectar of the gods. Earth's human wisdom is no great ground power, and love no gleaming angel from the skies. If they aspire beyond earth's dullard air, arriving sunwards with frail waxen wings, how high to reach that forced unnatural flight? But not on earth can divine wisdom reign, not on earth can divine love be found. Heaven born, only in heaven can we live, or else there are two perfects, perhaps they are shining beams.
Thank you. Patricia.
Nay, is not all thou art and doest a dream? Thy mind and eyes are tricks that make matters worse. If thy mind seems to thee a real sun, if thy life runs a swift and glorious stream, this is the illusion of the important heart, dazzled by a ray of happiness or light. Impotent to live by your own light, alone, convinced of the brilliant unreality, when their supporting realm is cut away, these children wander into matter. The matter vanishes into energy's vague, and energy is a motion of old naught. How shall ideals unsubstantial views be painted stiff on earth's vermilion blur? A dream within a dream, come doubly true? How shall the will of the mist become star? The ideal is a melody of thy mind, a bright delirium of thy speech and thought, a strange vine of beauty lifting thee to false sight, a noble fiction of thy yearnings made, thy human imperfection it must share, its forms in nature disappoint. And never shall it find its heavenly shape, and never can it be fulfilled in time. O soul, misled by the splendor of thy thoughts, O earthly creature with thy dream of heaven, obey, resign, and still the earthly walk.
So let's go back to the beginning and we can try to look a bit more at this colloquy, this exchange between the everlasting no and the everlasting yes. And Sonam, will you read? Will you read? Thank you. Thank you. We'll stop there. Thank you. This is the calm, inexorable voice of death. It rings out, it peals out like a great bell. It's inexorable, pitiless. Nothing can soften or change it. It has the effect of abolishing hope and of just cancelling out the golden truths of life. So when the sound of that voice resounds through the atmosphere of that lovely ideal world, the air trembles. And it changes its appearance. That world, that the ideal world, had appeared like a lovely dawn, bringing hope and the possibility of a greater day. But with the sound of that voice, that lovely world swam thin and frail, very weak, and it looks more like a lovely evening, the last evening glow, the pearly evanescent gleam that will soon vanish. No? It's on the faint verge of dusk in moonless eves. There isn't even going to be a moon. It's going to, that little gleam will give way to total darkness. That's the effect of this calm, inexorable voice. Even is a short and poetic form of evening, yes. So he tells her, Savitri, you are a prisoner of nature. You may be a many-visioned spirit, you have wonderful dreams and ideals. And here, in this realm of the ideal, you're enjoying your unsubstantial immortality. Maybe in this world beyond matter, in this world of dreams, you may feel immortal. But you are just a creature of thought. This immortality has been feigned. It's a pretense or a fabrication of the subtle, marvelous mind of man. Yes, Audrey.
But prisoner of nature is capitalized.
So, yes, he's saying, look, you are just a prisoner of earth nature. Well, you'll have to think that out for yourself, Audrey. I don't know. I think it means nature in general, and the nature which has made all human beings and all this. creative force, and you are imprisoned by what that force has made of you. So your immortality is just an illusion. You're actually a mortal creature. Well, we see the dream, but we don't believe that it can come true.
Well, something like that. And for myself, when I am more connected to that side, then I lose the beautiful colors.
Yes.
And for this,
he says this is an unsubstantial world. No? This is the world from which your yearnings, your hope of love, of immortality, of divine truth, of God, that is all a manufacture of this world that is basically unreal. In fact, he's saying all this is a product of your human mind. It's all your imagination. Yeah? You disagree? Okay, all right, tell me.
And are in that creative process of nature, you know that isn't just something that is a product of your mind. It's something amazing.
But everything in nature has to die sooner or later.
But it's
reborn.
It goes on and on. Mm. In the most inventive way.
Yes. I don't want to do nature down. I'm only trying to give some substance to what Death says
but
here.
Now
no.
You know why it's capitalist.
Yes.
It is an aspect of God.
Nature is an aspect of God, yes. But here, Death is saying that all this is a product of man's mind. When man's thought wants to build something eternal out of this dust that we are all made of and that all this is made of, then it paints images, ideal images, and they get rounded out and made to seem more real by a power of illusion. So our mind prophesies glories that are never going to be realized. We are just laboring delicately among our dreams. This is Death speaking. This is not what Sri Aurobindo says. This is not what we have to believe. This is what he's saying to discourage Savitri in her conviction of the reality of her immortality and the value, the significance of her love for Satyavan. Yes, Dom.
The secret death side, man's history, out long before actually this prehistory and so on, there is illusion after illusion, which is what's in life, which is fading away, and illusion again, fades away.
Well, that's one way of seeing it, and that's definitely how.
One of the characteristics of the Homo sapiens.
Yes. That's one way of looking at things. We can look at history and say, oh, yes, there have been these great ideals and these attempts to realize them, and they have always failed. No? He would really like us to be convinced of that it's no use. Why are we here in Oroville? It's just nonsense. No, it's just deluding ourselves that we can in any way contribute to a better future for humanity. So we don't have to believe everything that Death tells us.
Death is just trying to give weightage to her arguments. That's it. His arguments, he's trying to give weight.
by outwards.
Yes.
So that we believe it.
Later on we'll see that Savitri says to him, you speak truths, but you speak truths that destroy. And I'm going to answer you with truths that save. So that's what's interesting about this part of the book. We can recognize the truths in what death says. We can find plenty of evidence that what he says is right. But if we watch how he argues, we see that he is, as Savitri calls him, a sophist. He's taking hold of any argument that will help him to destroy her faith, her will, her knowledge. And it's only because through her sadhana pursued in the course of, or described in the course of Book 7, that she knows absolutely, fundamentally, for sure, she can distinguish the falsity in those truths. And answer him. Yes, Shaive.
I find striking here that the arguments of death, in fact, they are not really arguments, it's a series of assertions. And there is no proof, no even logical.
They are assertions.
Truth. You just say it's like this, it's like this, it's like this, it's an illusion, and with a kind of force of conviction.
Yes.
But the reasoning is weak. I remember Mother Céline, Roger Bidou made death say so he made him a little stupid.
A little stupid.
Not really clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. They said
it's a key. It's quite eloquent what he says, yeah. And it speaks to something in us which.
It speaks to our experience, yeah. That yes, the ideals fade at the end all the time.
Yeah.
So we have this experience and we respond. That yes, it's true, it seems to be true. But
so who will read next? Larry? Sorry? Reva has, she has her glasses?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, please read, Reva.
He holds this feeling of light as he shares, alien remains of unbodied gods, the rapture of the things that never can be born, hope chance to hope a bright immortal joy. Cloud satisfies cloud, phantom to longing phantoms. Leaves sweetly, sweetly is clasped on, sweetly chased. This is the stock from which the ideal is formed. Its window is thought the base of the false desire, but nothing real answers to their form. The ideal dwells not in heaven, nor on the air. A bright delirium of man's order of hope, drunk with the wine of his own fancy. It is brilliant shadows gleaming flame.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about this passage? It's the idea is quite clear, no? That all this may be beautiful, may be alluring, delightful, but it's unreal. It's just a shadow of a dream. Its builder is thought, its base is the heart's desire. Wishful thinking. Yes, Dom?
What is real, it seems, in spite of death, and we fall back at death, the wishful dream goes on and on, fails, but goes on.
Yes.
That's real.
Yes, that even has some effect. No? The allure of these ideals, they do have some effect, even if they're never completely fulfilled. So, Larry, thy vision's error.
Thy vision's error fills the azure skies. Thy vision's error. thy mortal longing made for me a soul. This angel in thy body, thy callest love, who shapes and swings from thy emotions hues, in the fragment of thy body has been born. And with the body that housed it, it must die. It is a passion of thy yearning cells. It is flesh that calls to flesh to serve its lust. It is thy mind that seeks an answer in mind and dreams a while that has found its end. It is thy life that asks a human heart to uphold its weakness lonely in the world, or feeds its hunger on another's life.
Thank you. So in a way, it's true, no? The atmosphere isn't blue. It only seems blue. It's an error or a trick of our vision. And the colors of the rainbow, similarly, perhaps. But now he applies that, something more fundamental. It's just your wishful thinking, your mortal longing, that has given you the impression that you have a soul, or that you are a soul. And this powerful, wonderful angel in your body that you're calling love, it's just a product of your physical body. It's being born in a ferment of thy body, a product of your glands. No? And it can't be immortal, because it's a product of the body, and when the body dies, it will naturally die too.
You sing there about love or about the soul?
Sorry?
You sing there about love or about soul?
I think he's saying that about love.
Just mentioned soul once and mentioned love.
But he also says this elsewhere about soul, that it's just a product of the body. Here it says that it's a product of your mortal longings, this physical body. And it's, of course, made up of different elements. There's the physical part, the passion of the yearning cells, and there's also the part of the heart, the emotions, and there's also the part of the mind longing for companionship. And also this fact that we human beings are gregarious beings. We don't like naturally to be alone. We want companionship. So the life is asking. It's asking for some support to uphold its weakness, lonely in the world. Or also the vital may just want to feed its hunger on another's life.
What does it mean?
I mean, it's a very unpleasant aspect of some human relationships, that one partner is just living off the energy of the other one. Sorry, Prasad?
Remember, Mother said this kind of relationship is nothing but a vital cannibalism.
Something like that. And she's spoken about people who are, in a sense, vampires.
Yes. Yeah.
Fortunately, I don't think it's too common. Mm-hmm. But in most relationships, there's a kind of mutual support and exchange of energy, interchange of energy. If that interchange of energy isn't there, the relationship doesn't last. We can go a little further, Prasad, you can read.
The beast of prey that falls through his ball, it crouches under a bush in splendid flower. It sees a heart and body for its food. This beast, though, drinks immortal under God. O human mind, vainly though tortured, and ours delight to stretch through infinities, long void and fill its formless, passionless cups, persuading their insensible abyss. We end eternity with perishing things, and trickest and fragile moments of thy heart with thy spirit's pain of immortality.
Thank you. A feint is a pretense. We had it twice, I think, today we read it. To feign, F-E-I-G-N, it means to pretend. So he says that love, that human love, it's just like a beast of prey, hiding under this beautiful bush, lovely flowers. To prowl, that's what a tiger does, or a cat does it, you know, prowling, moving in a stealthy way to catch its food. So it stops prowling, it hides in ambush under a bush, lovely, attractive bush. It, what it's waiting for is to find a heart and body to feed on. And you call this beast, you think that it's an immortal god, Savitri. How can you be so deluded? And what is more, you think that this illusory emotion you call love, that it can last. You want to stretch it out, an hour's delight, into infinity, to fill up that emptiness. You think somehow that this insensible abyss, this huge emptiness, which has no feelings, that can lend eternity to perishing things. All these things that you know are perishing things, impermanent. And then he gives his description of the universe. Sudhanya.
All the pure images born from materials and suffer with lust by the emptiness of place, the world of living, by an unknowing force, then crumble back into its heavenly mouth. Only the new alone can for the being. In the alone there is no room for God. In vain we thought God's chosen heart. Thou hast spoken on the immortal's void room. The ideal's gorgeous and unholy road, the ideal mirror of it for the real man. In prison, in form, that glory cannot be. Into a body, shut with happiness and love. In cancer, remote, for evil good. A sovereign of its own brilliant void, unwilling it descend to heart and blood. To inhabit safe while temporary in man's heart. In his heart, his son, deserted by his life. Familiar, bodiless, weak, bad, and dumb. Immobile, always striving to his sick. Dumb, it receives his body and his fear.
Thank you. So if we are a materialist, we can easily say that everything here has emerged, born from nothingness. Actually, the real scientific materialists, they say we don't know what it's emerged from. No? We can't begin to know what happened before the birth of this universe. It's lasting, it's encircled by the emptiness of space, it's held up by by some unknowing force, an unconscious energy, and then it's all perishable, it's all going to crumble back into that nothingness that it came from. And if we are spiritually inclined, we may say that there's some universal spirit, or eternal spirit, the one which is the origin of this. But he says, then only that silent alone, that singularity, can last forever. And that alone has no room for love. It's an insensible abyss. So, to dress up, to clothe love's perishable mud, this mud that's going to dry and crumble and collapse, you've borrowed some immortal loom for weaving. No? You've woven this gorgeous and unfading robe. It's a pure imagination of yours. No? That ideal, it's never yet been made real, because it belongs to some subtle realm, and if it gets imprisoned in form, it dies. It has no more life, it can't breathe. So the ideals are intangible, remote, pure and perfect. They rule in their own brilliant emptiness there. It's unwilling to descend to earthly air, but it may come to inhabit a temple, a white temple in man's heart. We may worship an ideal, but in his heart it's rejected by his life. Yes.
It's so silent and void and sensitive. Why would it descend at all to the earthly air? Mm. With the kind of weakness in the argument.
He says unwillingly.
And unwillingly on top of it, means I would like to go, but I'm not sure. For something which is void and sensitive, it's already a lot of activity.
Yes, it's true. Now, I remember somebody who came here in a group from Malaysia, I think, and they asked me to tell them a bit about Orville. And at the end, this man, he said, you know, it's wonderful, you people, you have an ideal. And he also said, ideals are not meant to get realized even, but it's a kind of guiding star. It's something to aim for, and it guides you. And he appreciated that we want to guide our project by some ideal which we may not be able to realize, but at least some value might be there. So that does happen. Ideals come and inhabit the temple of man's heart, but too often it shines in the heart, but it's rejected by the life. We're not able to put our ideals into practice. And then he characterizes this ideal as a kind of god, you know, a formless god. But I think we have to stop there for today. That's nice what you're pointing out, Jean-Yves, that the fallacies in death's argument, the weaknesses there. Sorry?
What is cenotaph?
A cenotaph. That's a monument to the dead. Yes, it's in a cemetery. It may be a war memorial or a monument, a memorial for one or more people who are dead. Cenotaph. It comes here somewhere, no? We'll look at it next week. So out of this whole canto, Mother has only read a single line So I will replay some of the passages from Canto 1 about this beautiful world of the ideal.
A sail in the sovereign emptiness of its land, the intolerant darkness came and grew above, till only a few black remnants stained the drain. But on a fading age of dumb lost space, still a great dragon body suddenly looms. Adversary of the slow struggling dawn, defending its ground of tortured wisdom, it trailed its coils through the dead martyred air, and curving fled down a grey slope of time. There is the morning twilight of the god. Miraculous from sleep, their forms arise, and God's long nights are justified by dawn into a happy, misty twilight world, where all ran after light and joy and love. She slipped to their far off rapture, drew more close. Above, her spirit in its mighty command saw all, but lived for its transcendent star. Immutable like a fixed eternal star. Then peals a calm, inexorable voice. This is the world from which thy yearnings came.